Welcome to the Fourth Circuit, the last day of our sitting. Judge Diaz and I are quite pleased to have Judge Kaiser sitting with us this morning, and we welcome him to the court, not for the first time. Counsel will hear you in the first argument, Mr. Hostler.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. My name is Carl Hostler, and I'm with the Prim Law Firm located in Hurricane, West Virginia. I've been appointed through the Criminal Justice Act to work on the appeal of William Thomas Davis. I did not handle the case below. And Mr. Davis is requesting the court to remove 5 years from his sentence of 15 years by way of the specific performance of a plea agreement.
I think the record's clear, but just so that it's especially clear, he is not seeking to withdraw his guilty plea.
Correct. And
that's been his position throughout.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And Your Honor, if I could, with court's permission, I'll begin with a factual omission on my own part. The pre-sentence investigation report at paragraph 123 has language in it concerning the fact that the probation officer recognized that at the plea hearing and pursuant to the plea agreement, there was a 10-year maximum that was put in front of Mr. Davis basically throughout the entire plea process. We have it written in bold print in the second paragraph of the plea agreement. We have the U.S. attorney initiating the plea hearing by reciting the plea agreement, where the second paragraph he's told that under no circumstance can he receive a sentence of more than 10 years. Even Mr. Davis would like the court to understand that even up to the time that he was heading in for the sentencing, his attorney, Mr. Yeager, who unfortunately passed away after representing Mr. Davis, that Mr. Yeager was suggesting to him that he may be looking at an 8-year sentence. And our biggest, that's a bad word, one of the strongest points that we would like to make to the court is that Mr. Davis was standing before a judge at his plea hearing, and he was at least theoretically exposed to life, and no one ever made that point to him. And all that we're asking for is a mandatory application of Rule 11 to say that when a person goes into a plea agreement, they should be able to walk out of it abundantly clear as to what their maximum exposure is.
Well, but wouldn't sending the case back and starting over again accomplish that result? Even though, and I recognize that that's not what your client wants, he's made that very clear, but that would accomplish that result. And what you're asking the court to do is something that simply is not authorized by statute or by any law, that is, impose a sentence that is not authorized under the facts of this case.
Well, Your Honor, it does, it goes into the plain error analysis. And again, if we don't all protect the integrity of our court system, I think that's the big question here. A person should not be misled.
I agree with that, but the remedy is unfortunately, the remedy your client insists he doesn't want.
Well, but Your Honor, other courts have recognized, and this is persuasive, other courts have recognized specific performance to be the preferred remedy in the event of a breach. For instance,
who breached this agreement?
The government.
How did the government commit a breach of this agreement?
By writing the second paragraph of the plea agreement that says that there will be a maximum of 10 years of imprisonment, and then the court...
That wasn't a promise, it was just misadvice.
But it's taken as a promise by that defendant. Certainly, anyone who's sitting there in a criminally culpable state, the main question on their mind and the main question that I would submit they are constitutionally entitled to is, what's the worst case scenario to me? When I get appointed to cases all the time, the first question is, what am I looking at? And the reason is because incarceration is a hard thing for a human being. And we want to get ourselves mentally prepared for what we're facing. And that's a big issue. That's
am I correct that there was never an objection by a defense counsel to the supplemental addition to the plea agreement?
Correct. You are correct, Your Honor.
Is that properly before us then?
No, sir. That may be...
Or you may folding that into the ineffective assistance of counsel?
I have no intention of taking that step, Your Honor, at my representation at this stage.
By what path do we consider your objection then?
By direct appeal, just in terms of...
The plain error consideration?
Yes, sir.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You think you make out a plain error case?
Yes, sir. And it's based upon the error being plain and affecting a substantial right. And one angle of attack for us is that Rule 11 isn't just a discretionary rule.
Well, one of the prongs of plain error is prejudice. What's your prejudice?
The prejudice is that the defendant had every reason to believe that he was facing a maximum of 10 years, and then that promise was broken.
But that's right in the face of the Puckett case, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And again, Your Honor, I'd like to emphasize, what do we do if a court, in good faith, we are not to suggest that there was a bait and switch or anything intentional on the part of the government or the justice system. But what happens when a big mistake is made that substantially affects what a person is facing in terms of criminal culpability? And Mr. Davis would certainly like the court to understand that he's been operating in good faith under this whole scenario. He has cooperated with the government. No motion for substantial assistance was ever made. But Mr. Perry noted in the plea hearing and also in the sentencing hearing that Mr. Davis was cooperative with the government and gave him the information that he had. And so there's no, I would feel really bad if we walked away from my presentation today thinking that Mr. Davis is in some way weaseling. He's just saying, I had every reason to believe that my maximum sentence was 10 years. And then I found out at my sentencing that my maximum potential sentence was life. And certainly, and in reality, this is not, I don't believe, this is not the kind of case that would result in a life sentence. I don't believe that. I think that result in this case would have been appealable on many other grounds. But regardless, when someone is giving away their liberty interest, which is a fundamental interest in our society, when they're exposed to life, shouldn't there be the euphemistic neon sign somewhere saying that there's a really bad potential in this case that you could wind up with life?
What if that if this had come up somehow during the course of the sentencing hearing, someone recognized the mistake, the judge, the government, the lawyer, would you still be asking for specific performance if, in fact, at that point he had been advised, oh, wait a minute, it appears that there was some misunderstanding as to what the maximum punishment was. Do you still wish to proceed with your plea? Because it seems to me that that would have been the logical response by the judge, is that I'm going to give you an opportunity to withdraw at this point if you want to.
Yes, sir.
And so what would have been the defendant's position then? And why is it any different now?
I don't know what his position would have been at that time. And the reason now is because the opportunity for that very thing has passed.
What about this? What about perhaps suggesting that the remedy may be a refusal by the court to consider the appellate waiver and to consider the claims regarding the sentencing issues on the merits?
Your Honor, I should have brought that up. And that is, that would wind up being under the effective assistance of counsel issue. And I failed to raise that issue in this appeal.
Well, I can tell you that's something that I've considered, but I just wanted your position on that.
And, Your Honor, I don't know what to tell the court right now.
Okay.
And in sum, if at the plea hearing, the court could have asked Mr. Davis, do you understand that the possibility exists that you may eventually be sentenced under the Armed Career Criminal Act? And do you further understand that if the Armed Career Criminal Act is applicable, that there is a mandatory minimum of 15 years and a possible maximum of life sentence? Those are 51 words, Your Honor, that could have solved the entire issue. And the question becomes, I think, whose burden is it to put that in front of the defendant?
Did and the trial judge violate Rule 11 by not advising the defendant of the true maximum and minimum sentences?
Yes, sir.
Did you raise that in your brief?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. In the reply brief, actually. In the reply. And again, the our main position is that Rule 11 isn't discretionary, and it's there for the fundamental benefit of a criminal defendant to understand what he's getting into by signing that plea agreement and by cooperating with the government.
This court sort of spanked my hands for not doing that in the lower court, that is, not revising the maximum and minimum sentence. Are you familiar with the Harrison case?
No, sir, I'm not. No, sir.
It's right on point.
And, Your Honor, just in sum, I'd like to direct the court's attention as much as I can to the perspective of Mr. Davis. He's a normally intelligent person. In fact, in many ways, he's very articulate. But his main message is that I was exposed to life and never knew it. And that is fundamentally unfair, we would submit. That is the prejudice in and of itself. And that should someone be facing that potential, and it may have changed his perspective on trying the case. It may have put him in the position where he would have wanted to, quote-unquote, roll the dice, because when you're looking at the 15-year mandatory minimum, it throws out the idea of acceptance of responsibility. And one of the things that a person, by way of a plea agreement, is trying to get are the two or three points from acceptance that you get by signing a plea agreement. But if he's facing the 15-year mandatory minimum, then that is indeed the minimum. And in addition, he's not going to get good time out of the Bureau of Prisons system. A 15-year minimum is a mandatory minimum, and he's not going to be subject to the normal 15% reduction for doing good time. And so he's, you know, it has implications way beyond just the just an analytical approach to Rule 11. In his life, it has very big implications. Thank you very much for hearing this case.
Thank you, Mr. Hostler. You have some time reserved for rebuttal.
Yes, sir.
If you choose to use it.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is David Perry. I am an assistant United States attorney in the Northern District of West Virginia. I'm based in Wheeling, West Virginia, and I was the assistant United States attorney that handled the underlying criminal matter. Your Honors, I would like to begin by discussing the specific performance argument of the appellant. The position of the...
Mr. Perry, I guess the lesson here, among others, is maybe haste makes waste.
Well, Your Honor, I understand what you mean.
I'm sure you do.
When you say that,
my sense is he was cooperative, and you never even had to indict the case, right? He pled to an information.
Correct, Your Honor.
So he was so cooperative, and things were moving so fast that I take it everybody just wanted to get it done.
I wouldn't characterize.
Wouldn't characterize it that way.
No, Your Honor.
How'd you make this mistake?
Well, Your Honor,
I thought that might be the answer.
Everybody went into this understanding that there was some uncertainty.
Yeah, but you drafted the plea agreement.
I did.
The government drafts the plea agreement. And I would have thought that as late as 2008, as Judge Kaiser mentioned, you know, all of us who've been district judges have been here before, believe me. But I would have thought that by 2008, there were enough cases out there to remind prosecutors and district judges of the need in these 922 cases to don't overlook the armed career criminal.
Correct, Your
Honor. I mean, there were a lot of cases early on.
But in all fairness, that was discussed at the plea hearing, and there's some good language from the plea hearing itself and
but
from
the plea agreement. But it's not in the plea agreement.
Yes, but the defendant was on notice that there
but
was...
But it's not in the plea agreement. Why don't you just say, yeah, Judge, I screwed up. Why don't you just say that? That's all it takes sometimes.
I think there was a serious issue with respect to uncertainty as
but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I don't understand why you won't just say it now. Just say it now. Judge, Your Honors, yeah, I made a mistake. We all make mistakes.
I
none of us is perfect.
The mistake I made was not knowing that he was ACC.
No, you don't have to know. That's exactly the point. Every 922 carries with it a potential life sentence. We all know that, right?
Yeah.
That's all. Look, I don't mean to be unduly harsh, but sometimes you just stand up and say, my bad. You know? Just as Judge Kaiser just said it, I say it all the time. In Maryland, we have a procedure, and I wonder if there are any other districts that do this. And it's really great. We have what are called pre-plea criminal history workups. And the probation office is very cooperative. When a defense lawyer and an assistant United States attorney start talking plea, one of the first things they do is they ask the probation officer, because nobody does an investigation better than a probation officer, better than the FBI, better than the ATF, better than any agency. And what they do is they prepare a quick report on the defendant's prior records. And so
that
99 times out of 100, there really are no,
that would
there's
have been
no uncertainty.
Helpful. Yes.
Do you do that in your district?
No, ever? We do not. We do not.
So. I commend it to you as a possible method. It really does avoid a lot of headaches.
I think that would be very helpful, especially for this particular case, because this guy had a 32-year criminal history that spanned.
Exactly. When you got a 40-year-old offender, you know, you're going back 22 years for an adult record. And usually it's the probation officer, not the agent in the case, who actually finds all that stuff. And the probation officers go out and they get the original documents, and they come in with these facsimiles. It's really great. Anyway, Look, I don't mean to be unduly harsh, but sometimes all of us just have to stand up and say, I made a mistake here.
Yes, Your Honor, I don't believe that any breach occurred. The United States did not make any promises in this particular case. The defendant himself acknowledged in paragraph 7 of the plea agreement that no promises had been made to him about what the final disposition of the matter would be. Paragraph 2 does outline the standard penalties for the 922G1 offense.
Well, does it create an ambiguity in the plea agreement?
I guess in a way it does.
And if it does, you lose, don't you?
Well, I think that there's some good case law there, the Williams and the Walker cases that say otherwise, Your Honor. I think that paragraph 2 sets out the standard penalties, but yet also in the plea agreement is the express understanding of the parties.
Well, I understand you can do a rationale of it, but it's construed against you, isn't it? You drafted the agreement.
Correct, Your Honor. Yeah.
Wasn't it exacerbated when the trial judge says, and do you understand that on the individual one-count information, you cannot, in any event, receive a greater sentence than the statutory maximum I have just explained, which was 10 years?
Well, Your Honor, that's standard language in the colloquy in my district, but the very next statement of the court is...
Well, it may be standard, but what was the defendant to think when he's told by the judge, you can't get more than 10 years?
But he's also told this, Your Honor, and do you understand that this court is not going to be able to determine what sentence applies in your case until a later date? And then he says...
Well, all that suggests is that perhaps it might be less, not that it might be more. Yeah.
Well, later on in that same page, Your Honor, he says, and do you understand along the lines that Mr. Perry was discussing in his summary of the amended plea agreement that your sentence could be enhanced if there were certain previous convictions, including those as a crime of violence? Do you understand
that? Once again, all that would suggest to a reasonable person is that it could be as high as 10 years, it could be less, it could be enhanced within that 10-year window, but in no event is it going to be more than 10 years.
Well, the same statute, Your Honor, that deals with the sentencing for a standard 922G1 case, in a further subsection, you have A versus E of the 924 statute, talks about the ACC.
Well, counsel, I guess what I'm back to Judge Kaiser's question, isn't it at least clear? Well, clear is a bad word. There's at least an ambiguity there that should be construed against the government.
I think it's unfortunate that the defendant wasn't on notice during the colloquy of the possibility of ACC sentencing. That's the best way that I could say it. I know that in other cases subsequent to this, if anybody suspects that that's a possibility, and he's advised of that by the court. But frankly, Your Honor, we did not see that as a possibility in this particular case. We were aware that he possibly had prior violent felony convictions. We weren't sure how many. We weren't sure which ones would qualify. We weren't sure which ones would satisfy the case law. This is a complicated and evolving area of the law.
Did you not have his rap sheet before you indicted him?
We did.
Or filed information?
But the problem is that it was so extensive, and it's very difficult to read those NCIC reports, Your Honor, until you actually do the pre-sentence investigation and request the records from the clerk's office. Sometimes it's very difficult to tell what he's pled to and what the circumstances of it were just from the NCIC report. A lot of times, they don't even say what the disposition is to those offenses on the NCIC report. You're literally pulling your hair out trying to read what it says. And ironically, I think that the best source of information up to the point where the PSR is done is going to be the defendant himself. I mean, he's the one that was convicted of this stuff. He's in a position to tell his lawyer, well, you know what, I did this, this, and this. And then his lawyer can check into it. I think that's a relevant consideration. I think that both parties did go into this, and the record's clear. Both parties did go in that there was some uncertainty with respect to the existence of these possible prior violent felony convictions. And the King case, and I realize that's just a district court case, But it does say that just because he got a sentence higher than the maximum set forth in the plea agreement, it doesn't follow that the United States breached the plea agreement. If the defendant really feels that he now claim, as he now claims, that the plea agreement was breached, then why didn't he try to withdraw his plea? I think that he's inviting the court to make an assumption. And it's very tempting to go along with that assumption, and that is that he would have gone to trial if he had known, if he had been told up front and directly, hey, you're probably ACC. I don't think that's a well-founded assumption in this particular case. And if I would just ask the court to take a look at that for a second, how do we know that he would not have pled guilty anyway, even if he had been informed? He may well have talked about this with his attorney during the week before. The record's clear that this issue was discussed between counsel the week before. And he may have said, what good would it do to withdraw the plea at this point? I mean, think about the evidence. He's going to be convicted at trial. We've got controlled buys on video. We've got CI testimony. We've got cooperating defendants. We've got damaging admissions. We've got the fact that $30,000 worth of stolen stuff was found in his house. He's going to end up in the same position, facing the same PSR, regarding the same criminal history. It is what it is.
How about the effect of the ambiguity on the waiver of the right to appeal the sentencing issues? I suppose one could make an argument that because he was, and I know you disagree, that he was misadvised as to the statutory maximum, that he never agreed to waive his right to appeal a sentence in excess of what he believed to be the statutory maximum, in this case 10 years, according to the defendant. So perhaps the remedy there should be that the government doesn't get the benefit of the waiver and has to argue the case on the merits.
And that's what I've tried to do, Your Honor. I'm aware of a case that says that a claim of breach of plea agreement survives the waiver.
Well, but you didn't say that in your brief. You insisted on enforcing the agreement in your brief. Are you now conceding that perhaps the best resolution of this case is to allow us to consider the sentencing issues on the merits?
No, I think I've tried to cover both bases, Your Honor. And I think even if he wins on the specific performance argument, Your Honor, there's no remedy for him because specific performance means that he gets a sentence of 10 years, right? Well, that's an illegal sentence, assuming that he's ACC. Assuming that he's ACC, specific performance in this case would require the district court to impose an illegal sentence.
That would violate the statute, wouldn't it?
Yes. I think that's a relevant consideration also. But this guy
that's
never...
That's why I think you shouldn't hesitate to say, I made a mistake.
I did make a mistake.
All right. All right. Made my day.
Let me ask you, is this a plain error case? Is that the route we have to go to consider the objection?
He never raised this issue, so I definitely think it is plain error.
Well, plaintiff's or appellant's counsel said that I think he conceded the fact that it was not objected to and we had to follow the plain error route to consider it.
He did say that, Your Honor.
Well, what's your position?
Well, he didn't raise the claim. Even if the claim survives the waiver, assuming that it survives the waiver, and I've tried to address it on the merits from that perspective, without conceding, I think that yes, the plain air standard would apply, and then you get back to the fact that, well, would he have gone to trial anyway?
Well, if you breached the contract, assuming you did, then the defendant doesn't have to abide by the contract, does he? If you're the first breacher, doesn't that, in effect, make the contract voidable from his standpoint?
Correct. Yes. But this individual never ever said that had he known he was ACC, he would have gone to trial. He never ever said that had he known he was ACC, he would have tried to withdraw his plea. And he never ever tried to withdraw his plea. I think that's significant in this particular case. He had plenty of time to do so. The plea was entered on April 2nd, and the parties were aware of the issue. They were aware of the significance of this determination of criminal history at that time. The sentencing was held on July 1st. A lot of time passes in between there. I think discussions between counsel, as well as the court's own statements and the reference in that paragraph, the plea agreement, it's pretty clear from that that the defendant was at least on notice of the relevance of his criminal history, even if he wasn't specifically told, hey, you could be ACC. At that point, nobody knew. Until we get back the PSR, nobody knows for sure. if the waiver is enforceable, then I think there's also an interesting consideration there too. If the plea agreement wasn't breached and the waiver is enforceable, then I think the rest of the defendant's claims have to fail because they've been waived. He never contested the validity of the waiver provision of the plea agreement. He does not now contest the validity of the waiver provision. And the district court's ruling on the 2255 clearly finds that it was a valid enforceable waiver. It certainly is unfortunate the way things played out, but I think that in this particular situation, the law simply is not on the defendant's side, and if specific performance were to be ordered, the court would be required to impose an illegal sentence. If the court has no further questions, I would surrender the rest of my time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pitcher. Do you have any questions? Thank you, Mr. Perry.
Thank you.
Mr. Hustler?
If I may, Your Honor.
While a plea agreement begins out of a contractual nature, there are still complications from a constitutional aspect for a defendant, and placing a burden on the defendant to present his criminal history, I think is burden shifting in a very bad way and would be constitutionally improper. There is reason to believe that Mr. Davis is not subject to the Armed Career Criminal Act.
Same question I asked Mr. Perry. If we grant your request for specific performance, won't we violate the 15-year minimum in the statute?
There are factual reasons to believe that the statute doesn't apply.
It does not apply?
Does not apply.
Well, that's contrary to the facts, isn't it?
No, sir. The ACC objections below were not very well made. And
well, I assume that there are the qualifying pre-convictions that the ACC is based on.
Your Honor, I think it's a very triable ACC case, simply because of the fact you're talking about applying a statute to someone who was, number one, never armed, who was, number two, never had a victim in the area, and number three, there's nothing to indicate that the ACC should factually apply to this individual. I realize that we take
maybe
a categorical approach.
Have the government make a motion for substantial assistance and avoid the statute?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. And, Your Honor, if I may, that's probably a good place to stop.
Mr. Hostler, we appreciate your availability and your willingness to take on these cases by appointment of the court. We appreciate your presentations very much.
Well, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Appreciate your efforts.
Matter submitted. We will come down and